On this edition of Free Culture Radio, we talk drug consumer safety and more with the chair of National Normal, Dan Vietz. Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. E-Valley is an acronym that means e-cigarette and vaporizer-associated lung injury. It's also referred to as vaping-associated pulmonary injury. Don't hear about it a lot nowadays. Back in 2019, there were reports of this mystery illness. Thousands of people diagnosed with serious respiratory infections. Dozens died, including two people in my home state of Oregon. The common factor in these illnesses and deaths was the use of vape products. Now, at first, these were attributed to the illegal market. You know, there's no regulatory control of illegal products. As an old friend always says, thanks to prohibition, you really don't know what's in that bag. Or in this case, in that cartridge, right? So the problem with that theory was that the deaths and several other cases in Oregon, here in my home state, people were only using the legally regulated products purchased in licensed retail shops. So people were digging deeper, and what we found was really alarming. These vape fluids are being made with a lot of different chemicals. You have terpenes and flavorings. We call them natural because they're derived from plant sources, but they're still chemicals. And then you have what are called viscosity agents. These are chemicals that are added to make liquid materials thicker or thinner. Like, see, weed oil, the actual pure extract, is thick and gooey. You could never make that work in one of those vape carts. It'd clog immediately. So people add these viscosity agents, right? And since people who vape enjoy flavors, they add these terpenes. Now, these chemical additives are broadly referred to as diluents. That is, they're used to dilute the original product. Now, vaporizing, that just refers to the process of raising the temperature of some product, solid or liquid, you know, weed oil or actual buds, raising the temperature until the oils boil and turn to vapor, but nothing combusts, right? So back in the day, that meant using an industrial heat gun or a volcano vaporizer. Other brands are available. And you blow hot air through a chamber that contains the weed, or weed and oil. And this hot air, it's really, really hot air, several hundred degrees, it gets blown through that chamber, heats the weed to the point that the oils boil and then turn to vapor. And then that vapor, along with the air, is collected in a plastic bag on the other end. The heat, again, isn't enough to combust the weed. There's no smoke, per se. It's just enough that the oils in the weed boil and turn to vapor. That's really kind of a neat process. Now, electronic vape products work in a similar way, but using these vape oils, which, as I've mentioned, contain a lot of chemicals, a lot of additives. And that's where the problem is. See, under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetics Act, there's this thing called Generally Recognized as Safe. Yes, the acronym is GRAS. According to FDA, quote, under Sections 201S and 409 of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, the Act, any substance that is intentionally added to food is a food additive that is subject to pre-market review and approval by FDA unless the substance is generally recognized among qualified experts as having been adequately shown to be safe under the conditions of its intended use, or unless the use of the substance is otherwise accepted from the definition of a food additive, end quote. Now, the key phrases there are intended use and food additive. These are substances that get added to foods and beverages, so these substances are generally recognized as safe to eat or drink. I have to state the glaringly obvious here. Vaping, raising the temperature of a substance to the boiling point and then inhaling the hot gases that result, is not the same as eating or drinking. Research published in the New England Journal of Medicine and in the journal Curious at the end of 2019 pointed to vitamin E acetate, VEA, which was being used as one of those viscosity agents in vape fluids, as a likely cause. My home state of Oregon has banned the use of vitamin E acetate along with a few other chemicals in the production of vape fluids. Again, this is vitamin E acetate that's not being ingested or applied topically. It's being heated to boiling, and then the resulting gases are inhaled. I should also note that according to an article published in 2023 in the Annals of Thoracic Medicine, while VEA is the likely cause of E-Valley, there are other components like polyethylene glycol, flavoring additives like diacetyl, that may contribute. Now, I could go on, but I have a guest waiting on the line, and I know he's chomping at the bit to jump in. So before any more ado can possibly be furthered, allow me to introduce my friend, my comrade, my longtime associate, Dan Vietz. Dan, how the heck are you?
Well, I'm doing fine. Lucky to still be among the living, but I am actually still quite active, both in court and in the public arena.
Before we get started, tell folks about yourself. Who are you? What do you do?
Oh, I'm just a farm boy from Missouri. I went to the university here in Columbia and never left. went back to school to become a lawyer, and I've been mainly for the last 4 decades defending people charged with marijuana offenses. But somebody went and legalized marijuana here, so I don't have near as many marijuana clients anymore. Now, I was very honored to be chair of the board of directors of the campaign that legalized medical marijuana in Missouri in 2018, and then chaired the advisory board of the campaign that legalized adult use of cannabis products in 2022. And we had the benefit, of course, of seeing what many other states had done, what they had written, what had worked, and what had not worked as well. And we tried to cherry-pick from what other states had done, and we consulted with lots of folks from outside the state of Missouri to get ideas about how we might write a law that would pass. That's the number one requirement. It's kind of pointless to put a law or an initiative on the ballot that doesn't pass, but that would still include as much as we could positive little corollaries. So, for instance, we and in fact, I drafted a proposal which is now part of Missouri's Constitution, which says that no one's probation, parole, or pretrial release can be revoked solely because of legal marijuana use. Now, a lot of judges are resisting that. A lot of judges are complaining that they don't like that. And they say, well, you know, it's still against federal law. But I say, judge, we're not in federal court. You're not a federal judge. Do you know what federal law is being violated? No, of course, they have no idea. They just know that it's still against federal law. And so gradually they're coming around. I think that ultimately our Court of Appeals is going to have to clarify this for Missouri courts. We're very proud of the fact that we incorporated a strong automatic expungement provision in our law. And it covers not just, you know, possession of small amounts like the Biden pardon program for federal cases. It covers, in fact, all marijuana offenses with very narrowly drawn exceptions. All felonies and misdemeanors shall be automatically expunged. Again, we're having to litigate some of the details. But for the most part, it's going well. And at this point, we have at least 125,000 marijuana cases which have been automatically expunged. In a few cases, we've had to go to court and say, Judge, this is eligible for expungement. In fact, it's not just eligible, you're mandated by our Constitution to expunge this case. Generally, they come around. Now, we're working with the ACLU right now on a case in which a judge in Southwest Missouri tried to revoke a woman's probation because of her marijuana use. She's a medical user. It doesn't, you know, it's not restricted to medical users, but we're litigating that matter. ACLU is litigating that matter. I sent the defendant to them, and I'm remaining involved in that case to the extent that I can. And we look forward to a ruling from the Court of Appeals clarifying for Missouri judges that, yes, it really does mean you can't revoke probation over marijuana use. So I don't think any other state has that provision in their law. But that's just one example. We've got a lot of innovative provisions in our legalization constitutional amendment, which benefit consumers.
I love that. Automatic is the way it ought to be. And judges still, oh, you still have to convince the judges. That sucks. But that is the, oh man, good job. By the way, congratulations. I don't think we've spoken since then. So congratulations on
Thank you
that.
very much. You know, we work with the industry, Doug, and that's very important. I mean, I'm not involved in the industry. I advised a few people on their applications, but I don't have any ongoing relationship with anybody in the industry in terms of any kind of legal representation. But I was very happy that the folks who represented the industry in our state, in particular in that second campaign, the legalization of adult use campaign. The medical industry, of course, is well established. And as in most states, our initiative would provide them with more or less automatically the ability to expand into non-medical adult use sales, manufacturing, and distribution. But one of the important compromises which the industry accepted is the fact that there's no cap on the number of licenses which may be issued. There's no limitation on the number of licenses the state can grant. So they have no guarantee of any kind of a monopoly, even though some misguided activists who opposed our proposal kept on saying so, it was really never true. Now, the state has limited at this point the number of commercial licenses they've issued, but that will not stand. And eventually, well, it's already expanded. In fact, one of the provisions in our adult use law is mandating a minimum and only a minimum, there's no maximum, a number of so-called micro licenses. And micro is not really a good description of them. They're very substantial commercial licenses, which allow vertically integrated operations, which allow a small business operator to both cultivate and manufacture products and retail those products. They can be very, very lucrative. And so a minimum of 100 and doggone, I should know this number, but roughly 148 of these licenses will be have been issued and will continue to be issued for the next year and a half. And so and we have set certain criteria which we hope will result in a more diverse ownership, more diverse participation in the industry. We can't get away with saying, X number of licenses shall go to black people. That will be thrown out by the courts. But we have limited those licenses to people with limited resources. In other words, you can't be a rich person and get those licenses. Or I should say, you can qualify for those licenses if you're not a rich person, or if you've been arrested, or if you've had an immediate family member who was arrested for marijuana. So I've always believed it was more appropriate to benefit the individuals who've suffered from marijuana prohibition, not necessarily the communities that have suffered, although I'm not opposed to those communities benefiting, but I'm more in favor of benefiting those individual human beings who have suffered from marijuana prohibition. And indeed, that's what our law says. You'll qualify for a limited license if you or an immediate family member have been arrested for marijuana. And there are other criteria, living in certain districts where marijuana incarceration has been extraordinarily high, living in districts where unemployment is especially high, criteria which again we hope and believe will result in a more diverse participation in the industry. But we're here to talk, I think, about E-Valley and vitamin E acetate. So
Please tell me what is going on with this. I mean, I thought with all the science and the rest of it that some of this stuff was actually done and dusted. I really, really did. I was wrong.
Well, we thought too. What happened was the media were obsessed, as you pointed out, in 2019 and early 2020 with what was going on with vitamin E acetate. And initially, it hadn't been identified, but the Center for Disease Control and other scientists concluded, and no one questions today, that the cause of those deaths and those hospitalizations was the inhalation of cannabis products contain and nicotine products, I suppose, maybe in some cases, but primarily cannabis products containing vitamin E acetate. And it's important to understand, I'm no chemist, but I do know that vitamin E and vitamin E acetate are distinct and very different substances. So it's important to include that word acetate. Vitamin E acetate, in fact, can have benign and beneficial uses, but not in a product which is inhaled into the lungs. And so I don't think that people.
Specifically, we'll back up. Specifically, heated to the boiling point and inhaled into the lungs. There's a difference between you can aerosolize just the acetate, right? And you're basically inhaling it that way. That's different than having it heated and you're inhaling the resulting hot vapor. I'm sorry, that actually this is a thing that actually comes up in this stuff. If it hasn't yet, it will, trust me.
Well, you're very well informed on this point. And I want to talk with you more about this. My limited understanding, again, is that when inhaled, as you say, when vaporized due to heating, it becomes extremely dangerous. It coats the inside of the lungs with a substance similar to a plastic bag, and the lungs won't function anymore. And so it's very dangerous. And I don't think the people that initially put that substance into vape cartridges knew that. I don't think anyone had an evil intent. And I think that once they realized that were killing people, were poisoning people, for the most part, they stopped. And we're talking about, again, the legacy market, the black market, the illegal market of manufacturers and distributors. Back in 2019 and 20, it was almost exclusively illegal manufactured products which contained this. So it's especially bizarre that here in 2024, we have state regulators, and I do want to say they've generally done a good job, except for this. They've done a good job implementing our law, both the letter and the spirit of the law. I have very few, if any, complaints about our state regulators until this happened. What happened was, a few months back, they quietly revised their guidelines for testing of cannabis products. And of course, one of the great advantages of legalization is the ability for consumers to know what they are consuming, to know what they're buying, to require testing and labeling. And our regulations have apparently for some time permitted a tiny amount of vitamin E acetate. I don't know why. I don't think there should be any tolerance for vitamin E acetate. It does not occur naturally in cannabis products. If it's there, someone put it there. But our guidelines had allowed 0.2 parts per million of vitamin E acetate. They were revised earlier this year to allow 5 parts per million, which means 25 times more of an extremely toxic substance. Now, I don't think anyone knows with certainty what amount of vitamin E acetate is safe. I think none is safe. You know, safe is probably not the right adjective. Let's say survivable. I'm not sure anyone knows how much vitamin E acetate one can survive inhaling. But again, there should be none. The nation of Canada does not tolerate any vitamin E acetate. The state of Virginia does not tolerate any vitamin E acetate. And I suspect that most states do not tolerate any vitamin E acetate in legal cannabis products. And that's certainly the level I would advocate for. None should be present. But to increase the tolerance for this extremely toxic substance by 25 times with no explanation, and I've asked repeatedly, I've written to the folks down in Jeff City, they know me, I've been engaged with them since at least since our law passed. And again, most of the time that's been a positive interaction, but they have not provided any rational explanation for this action, for allowing a 25 times increase in their tolerance for vitamin E acetate. They actually claimed they were doing it to ensure that no vitamin E acetate is added to cannabis products. Well, that is absurd. Of course, that is nonsense. That's kind of like Lewis Carroll level Alice in Wonderland lack of logic. And I'll tell you what disappoints me is, even after we issued a press release last month on this, our news media have been strangely uncurious. They have not pressed the state to explain itself. Now, maybe I'm painting with too broad a brush, but I don't think any reporters that I am aware of at this point have actually pressed our Department of Health and Senior Services, which has a subdivision called Division of Cannabis Regulation. I don't think they've been pressed by the news media to explain this. And so it's rather bizarre. It's extremely disturbing. And frankly, we don't intend to let this lie. We don't intend to let this drop. DHS is kind of stonewalling. They're kind of just not answering. As long as the press lets them get away with that, they will continue just to not answer questions. They need to be pressed to explain themselves and to change that rule to eliminate any tolerance for vitamin E acetate.
I think part of it is the relation to the first, the people who were first doing these cartridges, the tobacco industry. They don't have to put, we specifically allow the tobacco industry to put whatever it wants into its products, and we don't have a list, and we don't provide a list of any of those ingredients. You buy a pack of cigarettes, you are buying a pack of tobacco and God knows what else. There is a list of several hundred different ingredients that they and that they're allowed to not reveal. And, you know, sugar and a few other things like that. But then there's also diacetyl, which is a butter flavor, which is dangerous and has been proven to, I think the phrase popcorn lung was the comes from the diacetyl exposure at a plant that was manufacturing microwave popcorn. The popcorn lung is the condition that some of the workers got. As I say, it's not only the VEA. There are some other things like flavorings and some other substances, which they don't have to bloody reveal, that people are heating, boiling, and inhaling the vapors of. It's just, here in Oregon, we banned that by the end of 2019. The state, the Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission, had banned the use of vitamin E acetate, along with a handful of other substances that were being used as diluents in these vape cartridges. Washington is also.
You're certain there's a zero tolerance for this in Oregon? Is that correct?
We have an absolute ban. And they also did that in Washington State. I have the law up here. In fact, the ingredients processor may not use a non-cannabis additive in an inhalable cannabinoid product that contains any amount of squalane, vitamin E acetate, then triglycerides, propylene glycol, and that's went into absolute effect after April, as of April of 2021. So for the last few years here in Oregon, at least, our vape products have been free of that. And I honestly don't even see all that many vape products anymore. I guess it's just a way. This is my conversation with Dan Veets, an attorney and civil rights advocate who's chair of the board of directors of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, NORML, also NORML's Missouri regional coordinator. We'll be back with more in a moment. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Welcome back. Let's hear more from my conversation with attorney, civil rights advocate, and chair of the board of directors of National NORML, Dan Veets. So I'm going to switch topic real quick because we are coming to the close to the end of the show, and I have a question that I needed to ask you, which is, what's happening with NORML? You're the new chair of the board of directors at NORML. I don't know how new you are, but you're back in the seat. You're back in the big seat. What's happening at National NORML?
Well, we're looking for a new executive director, and I'm glad you asked because it's not too late. If someone listening is interested in applying to be the executive director of NORML, now is the time to submit that application. I mean, right now. We haven't set a hard deadline, but we're evaluating the applications we've received, and we've received many of them. And so that's the most important decision any not-for-profit's board of directors ever makes, is the selection of the executive director. We have been operating with the good grace and the tremendous generosity of Mr. Randy Quast of Minneapolis, who has been not only incredibly financially generous to NORML, but has given tremendous amounts of his time. And he has filled in as our interim executive director, but he is not interested in the permanent position. So we want to relieve Randy of the burden, and it really is a burden because he's also our treasurer, both of NORML and the NORML Foundation. And he's done just a fantastic job, better, I think, frankly, than any past treasurer we've had, of actually analyzing our finances for us. So NORML's on solid financial ground. We're not in debt. We're operating within our means. Our staff has shrunk. We had a couple of large grants, and we had a couple of bequests from people in their wills. And I want to mention that to folks, too, that think about putting NORML in your will. We had a grant from a man in Little Rock, Arkansas, a bequest, I should say, from a man in Little Rock, Arkansas. We had to litigate in probate court, but we wound up NORML receiving over $100,000 from that grant. Well, those things don't renew, of course. And so we did have to not fill. We didn't fire anyone, but we did not fill some positions after people chose to leave the staff. So right now we have a reduced staff, we are hopeful through a number of potential sources that we'll be able to expand the staff again. And the folks we do have on board are doing excellent work. J.M. Padini, Morgan Fox, We've got some great people working for us right now that have been with us for some time, and they make sure that they make sure that the weekly news updates go out. They make sure that when important news stories around the country occur, that our members and those on our list know about them. I urge everyone to go to normal.org, NOM, excuse me, NORML.org. And sign up for our weekly news updates. That doesn't cost you a penny, but I hope you'll make at least a modest contribution, maybe make a monthly pledge to support Normal. But Normal's doing well. Rick Steves was our chair for the past 3 years. Rick Steves, the world's most famous and successful travel writer, host of programs on National Public Radio and public broadcasting television. And Rick is committed to the movement, and he's committed to supporting Normal. And so with his help, frankly, we anticipate great things in the coming years. It's very important. I think a lot of folks think after marijuana is legalized in their state, there's no need to support Normal any longer. Well, this vitamin E acetate issue shows you exactly why there is a role for a consumer interest organization to continue to function. And there always will be. It will always be important that there be a consumer-oriented organization, not an industry organization. The industry is not complaining about this vitamin E business, but the consumers and Normal on behalf of consumers is pushing to eliminate vitamin E acetate, just as Oregon and Washington State have done.
Dan, do you have any closing thoughts?
Thanks. No, simply that, I hope everyone out there will support Normal. Go to normal.org, sign up for our weekly news updates, make a pledge of even just a modest amount, a monthly pledge of support for Normal, and you'll be glad you did.
That was my conversation with attorney, civil rights advocate, and chair of the board of directors of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, Normal, Dan Vietz. For now, that's it. You've been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Big thanks to my guest, Dan Vietz. Many thanks to everyone out there fighting for civil rights, human rights, and social justice. And thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it, and you make it all possible. Free Culture Radio is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Free Culture Radio is available as a podcast or direct download. Links are at the website kbo.fm/freeculture. Theme music for Free Culture Radio is composed and performed by Tom Nickel and Four Dimensional Nightmare and is used with permission of the artist. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!